The wind from the west at 10 to 15 miles per hour. Tomorrow night, partly cloudy with a low of 32. The wind out of the northwest at 5 to 10 miles per hour. Saturday, mostly sunny and a little cooler. Look for a high in the mid-40s with the wind from the northwest at 5 to 10 miles per hour. Saturday night, partly cloudy with a low in the upper 20s. Sunday and Sunday night, mostly cloudy. We'll see a high Sunday in the low 40s. And a low Sunday night in the upper 20s. Monday's forecast, mostly sunny. Expect a high in the low 40s. At noon Central Time across Illinois and Indiana, a lot of sunshine. Temperatures in the upper 30s to the mid-50s. At Rockford, 44 degrees. It was 42 at O'Hare, 46 at Bloomington and Mattoon, and in Carbondale, it was 56 degrees at noon. South Bend reported 39 degrees. It was 48 degrees at Lafayette and Terre Haute, 49 at Indianapolis. Willard Airport reported a sunny sky at the top of the hour, 47 degrees. The dew point, 31. The relative humidity, 53%. The wind out of the southwest at 17. The barometric pressure, 29.96 and falling. At 12:38, 46 degrees in Urbana on the campus of the University of Illinois. The sky is sunny. There is a natural gas drilling boom going on in Youngstown, Ohio, but a series of earthquakes there has renewed focus on activities like drilling and mining that are known to cause earthquakes. Now people in the area are weighing safety over economic growth. Tim Rudell has more.
Natural gas deposits that set off the drilling frenzy in Pennsylvania and other eastern states extend under Ohio. The drillers moving west are bringing billions of dollars with them, buying up leases, equipment, and pipe. Youngstown is looking at a double benefit, from new wells and from supplying pipe. Steel manufacturer V&M Star recently committed nearly $1 billion to build new mills here to make that pipe. But then the earthquakes started, 11 over just the last 9 months, all near what's called a deep injection brine disposal well on Youngstown's east side. Bob Liller's house was near the epicenter of the biggest quake on New Year's Eve, a 4.2 on the Richter scale. He's a plumber picking up supplies at Girard Hardware, a squeaky floor old-fashioned hardware store also near the Temblor Center.
Well, I was in bed sick. Wife was laying next to me, and the house started hopping. Headboard started hopping. So we kind of jumped to the front of the bed. Bam, 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 bam. It was serious.
Girard Hardware owner George Thomas and plumber Liller agree that the quakes raise real concerns.
It's money. It's just, but, you know, you can't kill the earth. But you hope
I'd like to see the drilling and all the money and everything.
Yeah.
But I don't want the house to come down around my ears, okay?
Tina Krastis owns Simone Salon. She and daughter Nicole say they felt the New Year's Eve quake, too. It was at least 40 times stronger than the earlier quakes.
I was doing someone's hair, and I heard like a big ba-boom, and the building just shook.
It was like a huge, loud sound.
It was like a train.
Tina Krastis wonders about the environmental risks from the drilling boom and says that boom has yet to do much for her business. But George Thomas says his business has picked up, and plumber Bob Liller says his has too.
So hopefully this will put everything back on track to where we start piping some new housing again, or they'll add on to the house. So that's my hope. The other thing is I don't want to be thrown out of bed either.
After the last and relatively strong earthquake, the Ohio Department of Natural Resources shut down the suspect brine disposal well pending further study. But there are 176 other such wells throughout the state, and Ohio does seem to be a favorite dumping ground for the tens of millions of gallons of waste fluid from the drilling boom all over the east. That may be because, until the Youngstown incidents, no Ohio injection disposal wells were ever associated with seismic disturbances, even though some of them have been operating since the 1970s. But Youngstown lawyer Alan Wenger, a specialist in gas and oil leases, thinks the wells are in Ohio in part because of lax regulatory policy.
It's hard to explain. It's hard for me to understand. And folks that don't work with this stuff, I'm sure, are pretty outraged that, you know, why are we taking everyone's crap here in Ohio? It may become a major political issue that someone's going to have to answer for.
Whether it will potentially move Ohio's regulatory approach toward greater environmental protection or specifically restrict brine disposal wells, Youngstown's recent spate of earthquakes has residents and regulators alike pondering just what kind of trade-offs are warranted for the sake of jobs and the promise of economic recovery. For NPR News, I'm Tim Rudell.
Earthquakes in Ohio and Arkansas associated with hydraulic fracturing for natural gas have taken many people by surprise. Gas industry executives say there's no hard evidence that their activities are causing these quakes, but some scientists say it's certainly possible. NPR's Linda Wertheimer spoke with science correspondent Christopher Joyce about what's known about that.
So, what is the evidence that human activity can cause earthquakes? What sort of thing could do it?
Mining, for one thing. This is one of the first places they got this notion. It was in South Africa, actually, in the 60s, and it was gold mines. And what happened is that you create a void underground, and then sometimes it collapses, and you've created an earthquake. But there's another way that mines alter what goes on underground. You pump water out of mines because you can't work in a mine when it floods. And when you move water around underground, you're messing with a very complicated array of stresses along fault lines underground.
Now, hydrofracking operators do pump a lot of water underground.
They do. When they frack, as it's called, and they break the rock with the water, they use a lot of water. But that's not really what these earthquakes are all about. These quakes in Ohio and Arkansas are associated with wastewater wells. What happens is you use the water to frack for a day or two, and then you retrieve it, and then you haul it off and you pump it into these wastewater wells. And this is a lot of water, and it's quite deep. And so the deeper you go with, the more water, the more pressure you create underground. And that builds up. And if you get it near a fault line, it can trigger a quake. And actually, this happened in the 1960s in the Rocky Flats Arsenal in Colorado. There was a wastewater well, and they pumped a lot of water down there, and they got a 4.8 magnitude quake.
So what exactly does the water do to the fault?
Well, if you want to try to visualize a fault, let's say you put your hands together like you're praying, okay? You open up with your fingers extended, and then that line between your hands is the fault. So press your hands together hard, and that's called clamping pressure. It's keeping that fault stable. You add water, like a lubricant, inside that fault line, and boom, it slips and slides, and you got a quake.
So people have been moving water around underground. They've been doing it for a long time, from mining to get rid of wastewater. Why haven't people associated that activity with quakes before?
Well, geologists have, a few geologists. It's just not an area that people paid that much attention to. The geological conditions have to be just right. The quakes generally are very small, and it's hard to tell what's causing them. It could be natural, or it could be other human activities.
But, Chris, now these fracking wells are proliferating in places that are densely populated, places like Pennsylvania and Ohio, places where we haven't seen this thing before. So are we going to see more earthquakes?
That's definitely a possibility. What's happened is that you're doing this in places that are geologically different. It's not very active, but there are faults there. They're near heavily populated areas, so people are going to be paying attention.
So is it possible to avoid creating quakes?
Well, that's one of the things that the U.S. Geological Survey is working on right now. They're saying, look, if you do a seismic survey before you create a wastewater well, you can avoid possibly the worst areas. You can look for faults and stay away from them. You can look for the kind of rock that's more permeable, that's not so brittle. Sandstone, for example, it absorbs the water like a sponge instead of letting the pressure build up.
Presumably, it's not cheap. Can you do these preventative things in a sensible way that will still make the fracking a reasonable thing to do?
I'm not in the gas business, but I don't know their bottom line, but it's certainly not out of the question to do seismic surveys. People do them all the time for other underground, for mining, obviously, and for doing oil exploration. It just is something that's not required at the moment and probably might well be required in the future. But either that or recycle the water and clean it up. But that's also an expensive process.
NPR science correspondent Christopher Joyce, he spoke with Linda Wertheimer. This is the Afternoon Magazine. I'm Celeste Quinn. It's 12:47. 4 months after firing its CEO, Yahoo has a new leader, Scott Thompson, who comes from eBay, where he ran PayPal, the system people use to pay for online purchases. Now Scott Thompson faces a turnaround job, as NPR's Wendy Kaufman reports.
The internet giant that pioneered a lot of what's cool on the web has been struggling for a long time. And while Yahoo still has more than 700 million users, its ad revenues are falling while Facebook's and Google's are rising.
I think Yahoo just needs some clear focus to go after, whatever it is.
Sharvan Boskirk is an analyst at Forrester Research. She says leadership and direction have been in short supply at the company.
Yahoo's problem is it can't decide if it's a media company, a market research company, a technology company, or a data company.
And there are personnel problems, too, says analyst Rob Enderle.
Morale is very low. There are a mismatch of employees left over from different initiatives. It's kind of a mess, though it does have a very strong brand. It has one of the strongest brands on the internet.
Incoming CEO Thompson says the company's core assets are stronger than people believe. In addition to the well-known brand, he cites sophisticated technology and access to reams of data. The choice of the New England native surprised many observers. Thompson has no media background, no experience in online advertising, and no experience reviving struggling companies. Again, analyst Sharvan Boskirk.
I always think that people take jobs like this because to turn a company around is a pretty great accomplishment. I don't think it's an impossible situation. What I expect we'll see is some sales. I expect we'll see Yahoo selling off parts of their business.
One of those sales may well be the company's 40% interest in Alibaba. The Chinese search engine giant has been trying to get out from under Yahoo for some time, and many analysts had been advocating a sale long before now. Scott Thompson starts his new job as Yahoo CEO next week. Wendy Kaufman, NPR News.
Always wanted to visit Cuba? Well, now you can. Explore the cultural and historic treasures of Cuba with WILL. Enjoy a 9-day journey beginning May 13, 2012. We'll depart from central Illinois, flying into Miami and on to Trinidad and Havana. Space is limited to 30, and the deadline to register is February 1st. For more information, call 217-333-7300 or go online at will.illinois.edu.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday. It's the 5th of January, 2012. It's the birthday of Stella Gibbons, London, 1902. She wrote a parody of romance novels that became her first and most famous novel, Cold Comfort Farm, came out in 1932. It's the birthday of the poet W.D. Snodgrass, Wilkinsburg, Pennsylvania, 1926. He studied writing at the University of Iowa. He said, "I wanted to write plays, but my plays were lousy. The only way they could have gotten worse was for me to do what my teacher was telling me." His first book of poems was Heart's Needle, 1959, dealt with the pain of his divorce, the loss